Okay. Good. So you're doing it. Okay. You done?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's now on record. I'm going to start. Okay. Right. Okay. I was, yesterday's topic was Torah Shebech Tav and Torah Shebaal Peh. I wanted to just give a quick summary of which Mefarshim, when you study them on Chumash, are pretty much in the realm of, or Chumash or Nach, pretty much in the realm of Torah Shebech Tav, because they limit the Parshanut to just understanding the Psukim. And which of them, which other Mefarshim are sort of already moving into the realm of Torah Shebaal Peh. So I think I mentioned yesterday that the Rashbam and Ibn Ezra are, even though they're Mefarshim, they're very much trying to get at the essence of the Pasuk per se, and they don't really move along into Torah Shebaal Peh. Rashi, on the other hand, who on one hand, his goal is to get to the Pshat, which we will talk about another time, but he uses Torah Shebaal Peh in order to do that. And therefore, the study of Rashi on many occasions is certainly Torah Shebaal Peh. I've never made a count, but there at least half of the psukim that he comments on, he's quoting Midrashei Chazal and Chorus Begeder Torah Shebaal Peh. The Mefarshim that are primarily Torah Shebaal Peh, we can start with the Midrashim. They're certainly Torah Shebaal Peh, the Medrash Rabbah, the Medrash Tanchuma. Rashi we already mentioned. The Ramban, on the one hand, the Ramban is looking for Pshat, but the Ramban is very incorporative of the notion of very wide quotation of Ma'amari Chazal, and besides the wide quotation, he himself can be very elaborate on interpreting Psukim, to the point that it's hard to call the Ramban Tarsh. You know, if you're studying Ramban, you're learning Tarsh Baal Peh. Ramban is Gufa Tarsh Baal Peh. The same would be true for the Arachayim, the Malbim, the Tzir, Shum Shmuel Kol Hirsch, the Ksava Kabbalah, the Rada, Reb Dov Tzvi Hoffman, and needless to say, the many Mefarshim on Chumash that are written by the Admorim, which are primarily Chassidus, whether it's the Sfas Emes or the Pri Yitzchak, the Parashanut, their Parashanut on Chumash, while it may get to a certain depth of Pshat, it is certainly in its presentation basically Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay.
Rabbi Schrader?
Yes.
Are you saying that they're Torah Shebaal Peh because they quote Torah Shebaal Peh sources like Rashi does, or because they are their own interpretations have the status of Torah Shebaal Peh?
I think their own interpretations have a status of Torah Shebaal Peh, because it goes beyond, in most of the cases, the simple reading of the pasuk. Maybe they don't always feel that way, but if Reb Shmuel Kol Hirsch, without straying from Pshat, will go off on a philosophical exegesis on the implications of what the story is telling us, that's already Torah Shebaal Peh. And so on. I don't know how else to put it. If a Mefarish starts explaining what takes place in the Chumash based on ideas in Kabbalah, then that's without quoting any Kabbalah, but he's just using the Kabbalah terminology and ideas to express what he wants to put across, that's already Torah Shebaal Peh. It's hard to call it just commentary on Torah Shebaal Peh. In terms of Nach, here Rashi, Radak, Ibn Ezra, the Malbim, the Mitzudos are all really focusing on Pshat. The Abarbanel, on the other hand, who can get quite lengthy, he starts asking questions, starts giving answers, starts giving different answers, starts evaluating the answers. again, even if he's looking for the simple meaning of the Naf, the ultimate meaning, the elaboration that goes about it, it's involved in the Abarbanel, is certainly Torah Shebaal Peh. When you're dealing with Sefer Mishle, Rashi, the Menezer, and Rabbeinu Yonah are certainly Pshat, but the parish of the Gra on Mishle is already Torah Shebaal Peh. His interpretation is beyond. Also for Yashkafa are Torah Shebaal Peh, and certainly also for Kabbalah are also Torah Shebaal Peh. And Sifrei Musar, unless you're learning Tanakh per se for Musar, like Mishle, Kohelet, Tehillim, Shir HaShirim, or the Musar that comes out of the Devarim Rishonim and the other stories in Nach, then certainly Sifrei Musar are basically Torah Shebaal Peh. Okay, with that, I think we've completed what we wanted to talk about in terms of Torah Shebaal Tzav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Not that we've covered it, far from it, but in terms of this year, I think that'll be enough.
Can I ask that's a question?
Sorry.
True to say that basically, frankly, everything is Torah Shebaal Peh except the written Torah, the even if I'm learning the Kerush Rashbam, Kerush Ibn Ezra, I'm learning Ibn Ezra and Rashbam interpretation. It's also Torah Shebaal Peh. So unless I'm myself learning the words of the Tanakh, that's the only chance to learn Torah Shebaal Peh. No,
I could see someone making that argument, but I don't think that's the case. I can't prove that I'm right. I'll explain why. If the goal of the Mefarish, or the goal of the teacher for that matter, is exclusively to explain the Torah Shebichtav, then that level of explanation, I think, still has to be considered study of Torah Shebichtav. I'll just give a simple example. Let's say a mefaresh or a teacher wants to explain the difference between the word vayomer and the word vayidaber. Now, on the one hand, that could take a very long time to explain, and you may quote quite a few psukim in order to explain it, and you may quote midrashim in order to explain it also. But if what you're really trying to do is just to get to the essence of what is the difference between these two words that are seems so synonymous. I think that's still beginner learning Torah Shebaal Peh. You follow what I'm saying? That's so I think, and I can imagine someone saying otherwise, but I think that's correct. Okay, we're now going to talk about a new topic. The topic today is Bekiyut and Iyun. Again, we're following what I tried to introduce yesterday, that the issues that we have in Talmud Torah are different than the issues of our ancestors. There is reference to these ideas, and I'll make reference to it, but it's hard to see in the Rambam much reference to this question. I at least I didn't notice it. So let's quote the Gemara at the end of Arios, which is also, if I recall correctly, to the end of Brachos as well. The Gemara tells a story. The story is that the yeshiva in Pumbedita is about to pick a new Rosh Yeshiva. Apparently the prior Rosh Yeshiva, who is Rabbi Yehuda, must have recently passed away. Rabbi Yehuda has two great Talmidim, Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef. Rabbah and Rabbi Yosef were known by their nicknames. And their nicknames were not cute or shortened versions of their names. Rabbah was known as Oker Harim. And Rabbi Yosef was known as Sinai. What's the idea of Sinai? The idea of Sinai was that Rabbi Yosef had tremendous knowledge. He knew it all. Now, all the Amoraim knew Mishnayot Baal Peh. That was considered to be no big deal, frankly, in the Beit Midrash of the Amoraim. It was, not only did they know it Baal Peh, but it was assumed that they had instant recall to quote it whenever it was relevant, any Mishnah. What not all the Amoraim knew were the Braitot. The Braita of Reb Chiya, the Braita of Reb Oshia, whichever one of those is what's known as today as Tosefta. There were other Braitot as well, apparently. And there are also, we'll call, Memrot, which are mentioned in the Gemara by the introductory word Itmar. Who were the Memrot that said the name of? Well, mainly Rav and Shmuel, the first generation of Amoraim. Also, the great Talmidim, Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna. Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, I should say. Some other contemporary Amoraim that I can't think of right now. Perhaps the half generation before, Rav Nachman, Rav Chizkiah, Rav Sheshet. That's pretty much it. Maybe a few more. Then there also are the Amoraim of Eretz Yisrael. So the Memras of Bar Kapara and Reb Yanai and Reb Chiya and Reb Chanina, Reb Yosef Reb Chanina and Reb Yochanan, Reb Shlakish, Reb Yishuv and Levi. Again, I think that's it. That's maybe we should hear Reb Avo, Reb Ami and Reb Asi, but not much more than that. This is a very early time of the period of the Talmud. So Rav Yosef, though, he knew it all. Now, it doesn't mean that Rabbah didn't know a tremendous amount as well, that his knowledge was undoubtedly vast. But Rav Yosef was beyond. And in terms of what we today call Bikiyut, Rav Yosef was greater than Rabbah. Rabbah, on the other hand, was known as Oker Harim. He would uproot mountains. The idea of uprooting mountains is that with his koach hasvara, he could deal with ideas and ask questions in a very penetrating way that could undermine even the strength of a mountain. And this is usually what we think of today in terms of the koach of iyun. So once again, it wasn't as if Rav Yosef was not a great Baal Iyun himself, but again, as compared with Rabbah, Rabbah was considered to be more a greater Oker Harim than Rav Yosef. So that's how they were known. There was a question, who should be appointed Rosh Yeshiva? And please understand, this was not a machloket between Rabbah and Rav Yosef, that Rabbah wanted to be Rosh Yeshiva. Rav Yosef wanted to be Rosh Yeshiva. They were fighting it out. Nothing in the sort, as we'll soon see in the continuation of the story. The question was, who should be appointed, objectively speaking? Who is truly greater? The question was sent to Eretz Yisrael, and the response from Eretz Yisrael was that Sinai Adif, that if you have to choose between those two, then the one who knew it all was considered to be more crucial to be the leader than the one who was Oker Harim. And on that basis, the Beit Midrash offered, asked Rav Yosef to become the Rosh Yeshiva, and Rav Yosef refused. It's an interesting story. It says that he went to Baal Chalomos, I think, he asked him, how long will I be Rosh Yeshiva? He told him, 2 years. So he said, 2 years? I can wait. You know, that he would die after 2 years. So he came back to the Beit Midrash and said, I'm not taking the Rosh Yeshiva position. And they offered it to Rabbah, who did accept it. Rabbah was Rosh Yeshiva for 22 years and then passed away. And then Rav Yosef was Rosh Yeshiva for 2 years, and then he passed away. So it was not a machloket between them at all who would succeed in ascertaining the position for himself. But it was a true machloket lishma, not between them, but in the Beit Midrash as to what should be given emphasis to. I'm going to give you a comment of Rav Lichtenstein on this Agadita. Rav Lichtenstein said that, and he quoted others before him, I just don't remember who, that at the time of Rabbi Rav Yosef, you had to, you know, very little was written down. And either you knew it, Baal Peh, or you didn't really have access to the information. As the Torah Shebichtav, there's a whole machloket whether Torah Shebichtav was written down, when Torah Shebaal Peh, I should say, was written down at the end of the Memoran period, even the Mishnah, or whether the Mishnah was written down already at the time of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Sounds like Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi only edited the Mishnah, but it was still Baal Peh. But let's assume like the Rambam that was written down, but the Braita was certainly not written down, and the Divrei the Amoraim HaKdumim were also not written down. So if you knew it, you knew it. If you didn't know it, you just didn't have all the material. Bezman Hazeh said that things are written down, and especially Bezman Hazeh, Rav Lichtenstein said this 46 years ago, 47 years ago, when he said so much is written down and things are so easy to access. Then things were so easy to access, he said. Today, you can get Kol HaTorah Kula on your phone. He said the need for Iyun is much more crucial because the material per se is quite available. And of course, as we mentioned today, where Rabbi Google, Rav Google, gives all the answers to everything. Sometimes the Tichonistim can tell the Ramim all sorts of things that the Ramim couldn't quite say. Okay, it's Ekedata, here, it's right here on my phone. It's Yadua. But the let's, without speaking on the level of Rabbi and Rav Yosef, each of whom were clearly great in both of these realms, it's just that one was even better than the other in one, and the other in the other than that. Let's talk about it in a more general way. What's the problem with learning B.E.U.? I'm sorry that we're going to talk about it from the negative, but I think it will clarify the matter much better. The problem of studying things b'iyun is that the overfocus on a particular matter can prevent a wide perspective on the issue, that if only you would see the wider perspective, the question would go away, or it would be much easier to understand than under this very limited circumstances, with the very limited knowledge Rav Sabato, the Rav Sabato from Nisbei Richo, who opened up a yeshiva that basically focused on Bikiyut. He spoke about, imagine looking at a person's eye without knowing the rest of the face. And so you become an expert at the person's eye, maybe even only one eye. The over-focus on one eye, it gives you, do you know humanity? Oh, sure, I know humanity. I've been looking at humanity for a long time. I've been studying his eye. Right? But if you don't even know what a face looks like, then what are you studying so much in the eye? The limit of understanding is a the limit of knowledge, I should say, is it can be very hindering in getting a proper picture of what's going on. That's the problem of studying the Iyun beyond a certain point. What's the problem with Bikiyut? The problem with Bikiyut is, do you know what you're talking about, Bichlal? I'll give a very extreme example, but it's from real life. I was at a shul for Shalosh Shuddos in a certain neighborhood in the United States. And the donor of the Shalosh Shuddos was a person who had just finished Shas. And in honor of his Siyum HaShas, he sponsored the Shalosh Shuddos in the shul. And so he made the Hadran at the Shalosh Shuddos. And apparently the last Masechta that he learned was Masechta's Erevin. And Masechta's Erevin begins with talking about a Korah and a Lechi. And this person was also in charge of the local Erev, or at least was one of the people who would check the local Erev on a regular basis. And it became clear from his talk that he didn't quite understand that the way we use the word Lechi today in setting up an Erev around a village or a city has nothing to do with the Lechi that the Mishnah in Erevin is talking about. The Mishnah in Erevin is talking about a pole put outside at the entrance to a Mavoi that turns the Mavoi into a Rishutei Yachid. While the word Lechi that we use in Erevin today, it's a misnomer, but that's how it's used, is the pole upon which the string has to go over in order to create it. Surat HaPetah. I hope what I just said is clear to you. If not, it's okay. But the two have nothing to do with each other. It's just the same word. And in his describing it, it was clear that he didn't understand that. Now, imagine going through it. You can go through a good portion of the first parak of Erevin and not knowing what a lechi is, and really not understanding at all what you're talking about. And I couldn't help but feel that that's what was going on. So you could learn, and you can turn the page, you can turn the next page, you can turn the next page. Do you know what's happening? So this is the problem in Bikiyut. The example I gave is extreme, and one would think or hope that in light of the wonderful Schattenstein Talmud and the Koran Talmud and all these things that are available today, this shouldn't happen. But it could, and. The extremes of Bikiyut and Iyun can be very problematic. Let's put it that way. There's apparently a tremendous need to compromise one way or another, because otherwise you could lose it all. You could lose it all. You know, I remember Don sitting here with us, Don's rabbi, Reb Chaim Moser Chait. When he was younger, he learned at a certain yeshiva that his family was actually known for learning at, but that he and his brother, sort of broke out of. They would learn a Rashi, the Rashi would say Klomar, and then you had to figure out what was the alternative explanation of what Rashi was trying to upshlug by giving his parish rather than the other parish. Then they evaluate the other parish, and basically they could, in their Ian Seder, they could quite possibly not get past the first daf or for the first very few dapim in the whole Zman. Of course that was made up for their by their Bekias, but there has to be extreme Bekias to end up really with ignorance, and extreme Eilin, you could end up with really not knowing what you're talking about beyond a certain point. What seems to be at least a partial compromise on this matter is something that the Gra says in Mishlei on a number of psukim. In another places in the Gra, in Mishlei, he says that when a person learns a Masechta, they should learn it several times rather than go on to a different Masechta. Why should you learn it several times? Isn't it better to learn more? So he says that by learning a Masechta several times, your understanding of the concepts of the Masechta will be much deeper, much more serious, much more developed, much more mature. And by going over it, you will appreciate what the Masechta is saying in much greater. Now, please notice, he didn't say that you should, after learning a daf, you should learn the daf several times. Although that might be a good thing to do also. But he spoke about a quantity from the Gra's perspective, and a Masechta was a good quantity. You know, you got a Masechta, try the Masechta again. But the point was not to just know it baal peh. The point was is that by repeating the ideas that the Masechta has taught you, you're getting to understand it in a better way. You're getting to understand it in a wider way. And you're not going on to a different Masechta. Should not be seen as a chisaron in the breadth of your knowledge, but rather on a deepening of your knowledge within a chunk, because the Masechta is certainly a chunk. I want to go on to a different problem, kids. There is a pedagogic issue today. I remember I used to teach in the yeshiva. It was the yeshiva that in Efrat, it was called Yeshivat HaMiftar. I taught there for 26 years. In one of the years, we got a student. I won't say what country he's from. Make sure that the story remains anonymous. I was giving a shiur there, and the student came to my shiur a few times. And then told me that he's going to stop going to shiur. Okay, that's, the other rebbeim, that's fine. But he wasn't going to go to the other rebbeim shiur either. Why was he not going to go to shiur? Because his Rebbe Mufak, in the country that he came from, whom he felt very close to and attached to and felt obligated to listen to what he says, told him, mentioned his name, I have three words to tell you. Bekius, Bekius, Bekius. It's all about knowing it all. And since my shiur, like most shiurim in yeshivot, are in shiurim, not always, but it's usually at least one seder a day, I was not fulfilling his purpose in learning what he felt. And he wanted to learn Bekius, and he wanted to move quickly, and so on and so forth. To the limits of my knowledge, this fellow never became such a tremendous bucky. He went into the rabbinate. But I've never heard that he became famous for knowing Shas or anything like that. It's in other words, the Kiyas could be a bluff. In other words, you go through a lot of material, but then do you know it? Do you know it at all? or is the result of going through it so quickly without trying to get into its depth at all, ends up with what can be called surfing. You don't really get to the essence of what's happening, and you know you went through it, but it can really be the yatsas chara be'afseda, that yes, you were trying to get a lot of idiot by trying to broaden your knowledge of this and that and the other thing, you know, the next task, the next task, the next task. Or the next parak, the next parak, the next parak. And I'll tell you another story. Because the issue of Yudim B'Kiyut is not just a question to Rashi about that. It's a question to Rashi B'Chtav also. For whatever reason, I got to know over the years a number of people who became, who won the International Bible Contest, you know. The contest that takes place in Medina Israel every Yom HaTzmaut. The people I knew are all the people who were from Chutz La'aretz. I'm not talking about recent winners. I'm talking about people who are either close to my age, a little older, a little younger than me. It's quite a few people like that I knew in those days. I was never in such a contest. One of them said that her school sort of prepped her the whole year. She was pretty much free of all other classes to know the Tanakh perfectly, and it worked. And she won the International Bible Contest. But she said that after that, she could no longer learn Tanakh. It sort of pulled out of her any interest in proper understanding. She remains a front woman and a very devout woman, and her husband is a Talmud Chacham, and you know, she has many children, Baruch Hashem. But the and I know her to this day. But the over focus on the what and the under focus on the significance can be very damaging in terms of education. This is true both in Torah Shebichtav and in Torah Shebichtav. Take a simple example, I should say, like learning Sefer Mishlei. Mishlei has sukkim that the pasuk itself is a tremendous message. Sometimes it's a few psukim that together have a tremendous message. Sometimes it could be quite a few more psukim that together have a tremendous message. And sometimes it could be half a pasuk. But if you sort of run through it, then did it pierce you? Did the message make it into your neshama? Or did you surf the pasuk and you know it? Maybe you know it baal peh, I don't know. There's certainly plenty of people who know Tanakh baal peh. Not plenty, but the olden days were probably more when people had fewer sfarim. But you know, is knowing it baal peh what you have to do? It wasn't always that way, by the way, with the Israel. With the International Bible, when it said one of them, I won't mention who either, but is well known, important teacher of Tanakh at a women's Torah school today. But the some of them were very successful, but didn't doesn't always. But it the going over it in a surface like way could be very detrimental to the proper taking in. And the same is true of Gemara. There is especially Gemara, where Lechara, the Pashtut is that the you're trying to understand something. You're trying to understand an idea. That's what the Gemara is always putting across to us. What's the idea? What's the source? What's the meaning? What's the essence? And to sort of like just move over it as if it's you'll get to the essence another time. Right now, just learn the daf. It's very hard. It's very hard. For most of my teaching, I taught Iyun. A few years ago, I was asked to give a daf yomi shiur here in Efrat. And I did it, and I've been doing it for 3 years. It stopped with the corona thing. Bezrat Hashem, I suppose I'll continue when we get back beyond this illness. But the rule in this daf yomi, it goes for 40 minutes, as much as you accomplish. And we rarely accomplish a full daf. And there's supposed to be mashlim on Shabbos. And the Shabbat is the Magid Shir, stays there for a few hours, and he sort of finishes up what we didn't get to do to keep up with the daf yomi. But the need to be able to explain things properly is crucial. And that it be properly understood. Now I'm going to talk about a problem with Iyun. What's the problem with Iyun? The problem is almost obvious. Do you really know what you're talking about? If the whole goal is to have a deep understanding, well, are you really getting that deep understanding, or are you making believe in the deep understanding? This is especially problematic when you have catchphrases. The most famous catchphrase in learning B'iyun is Gavra and Chefza, which is easily translated into English, subjective and objective. And I'm not sure that most people who use the English words know what they're talking about here. Again, another catchphrase. Is it a din in the mice of the mitzvah, or a din in the kiyum of the mitzvah? Does a person know the difference between the mice and the kiyum? It's not always so clear to me that the catchphrases are helping the people, or whether they're just giving them a way of making reference to ideas that are not properly understood. I remember when I was in the Rav Soloveitchik shir, there were times when Rav Rosenzweig would come over to me after the shir and make a comment about something that was said in shir, not by the Rav, but one of the Tamidim, which it seemed that he felt that if he could say such a thing, that clearly he didn't know what was going on at all. Or that they were so into the expression of the idea that they didn't quite understand what the idea was behind the expression of the idea, and the problem with the Mekiyas and problem with the Iyun is the same problem. And it's, you're working on the Mekiyas, do you really become a Baki? You're working on the Iyun. Are you really understanding it the way it should be understood? Is the Iyun really getting there? And or are you just digging the hole deeper and deeper, and ultimately it's not coming out clear. You're not coming up clear from the depths. Just 1 minute. One of the great teachers of all time was Nechama Leibovich. I think today she's known more for her Sfarim and for her many students. Some who do follow in her way and some who don't follow in her way. But she was certainly not... it wasn't just that she had a tremendous understanding of Chum Shenach and the Midrashim that explained it, but she was the greatest presenter, and after she taught something, you knew it like it was very special. If we had to say, what did she focus on, Iyun or Bkiut? I think the answer would be that she focused on Iyun. That she wanted to make sure that you understood the Pasuk right, or you understood the Rashi right. You understood what was bothering Rashi in the Pasuk. You understood how Rashi was resolving the question that was bothering him. You saw how the different Mefarish was resolving it differently. And she'd make sure you understood the difference between what Rashi said and what the other Mefarish said, and so on and so forth. But she emphasized that you got to keep a pace. You got to keep moving. You got to get somewhere. You have to give the Talmud, the student, or the Talmidah, it doesn't matter, a sense that they're accomplishing. Because is it possible to give a whole year on Perek Aleph and Bereishis, even learning Chumash every day? It probably is. And I remember I was in when I was in Yeshiva High School, our Chumash Rebbe more or less did that. It wasn't voracious. It was a different parrot that he spent pretty much too long on. Pashas Devarim, you know, there's a limit to how much can you talk about what the Amorim are really, the Knizim and the Rifaim are really the I forget already. You know, it's like, the need to progress is important. It's part of our learning process. And if we the need to strike a balance, it doesn't have to be the same balance for everybody, but there does have to be a balance between accomplishing a certain amount of material and understanding with a certain level of depth what you're what you're meant to get out of it. Because if you don't work on both of these things, on our level, Evmein Rabbe and Rabbi Yosef, Sinai and Oker Harim, you could end up with nothing. Okay, thank you very much for coming tonight. I'm going to stop here. If it's important, you know, from now on till Shavuot, I plan on giving 4 days a week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday.